Right, well, good afternoon, everybody. Can I welcome you to the OUVCE Philosophical Society Members' Day 2011? And before we start properly, the first thing I should do is just to say to those, because there's many new faces here, there's an emergency exit at the back, and there's one at the front here. There are toilets distributed in strategic positions around the building, very close to the bar. And the restaurant is at the other side of the court where there's interest tonight for those who signed up for that. So that's the admin side of things. And then the first thing formally I should do is just to thank Eileen Walker and Peter Gibson, who've done all the work for organising today. And before I say any more, I think Eileen's got one or two admin points to make.
Just one point, really. We've got so many new people here today. It's wonderful to see you. Delighted that you've all come. If you haven't seen me, I'm going to stick you off and give you a free drink token. The turnout's been very good, so with a little bit of money left over, you can get a drink at the bar, anything you like. But I need to give you a token.
Well, thank you very much. And as Eileen said, we've got a lot of new people here, so I'll just say one or two words about the society. I think you may have already become members, but there might even be people here who have just come along to see just how mad we really are and whether they really want to join. So the society, we've got a lovely website that Mike Arnatoff organises. I can't see Mike, our webmaster at the back there with his hand up. And if you go to the website, you can find out about our regular activities. The main activity, of course, are the weekends that Marianne Talbot here, our president, organises as the official philosopher here in the department. So that happens every now and then, and the brochures for this are upstairs, but you can also find information on the web. And if you just Google Oxford OUDCE PhilSoc, we'll find you right at the top of Google. It knows about us. We have a discussion club that meets on the second Friday of each month, and that meets here, and that gives members a chance to talk to each other and try out their ideas in an even more informal setting than this. Now, this is our members' day, so it's the members speaking today. And I'll say a bit more about that in a moment. So we're very pleased to see the new members, and I just say that one of the activities is our journal. We have an annual review published every year. Steve Chin is the editor. Now the closing date for this year has just gone, but it's an opportunity for you to publish your ideas and to practice things out in a relatively informal way. Now, one of the things I have to do, being that this is a philosophical meeting, so to get down to some philosophy as soon as possible, what's the point of philosophy? Or philosophy, what is the point? It became more formal, I noticed, on the latest hangar. But I think one can ask this question of anything. You know, what's the point? When I was thinking about saying something, I remembered when I was young, talking to somebody in a pub, as one does, and they're just chatting away with him and somebody else. And they were talking about their hobby, which was collecting tropical fish and keeping these fish in tanks in their living room. And I remember asking a rather inane, naive question, well, what's the point of that? And this guy said to me, well, don't you have any hobbies? And this remark has sort of transformed my attitude to matters philosophical, matters scientific. So whenever I'm in a meeting, I train myself never to ask the question, what's the point of that? So here we have an opportunity where we've been asked the question, which is different. So I thought I'd say a couple of words about this. I don't want to preempt the speakers. I don't actually know what the speakers are going to say, but other than having read their short abstract. But to me, when you ask a question like, what's the point? You're not really seeking one simple statement. You might be seeking a list of statements that might be clustered into groups that have got some sort of hierarchical arrangement, some things more important than others. And I could make a long list of the things, the reasons for doing philosophy. But I think I pick out just a couple of these ideas which prompt me to do philosophy. And I think one of the most important things that you get when you study philosophy, or rather, I'm reminded that Karl Popper, when asked to do the address for the British Society for the Philosophy of Science in 1952, is actually reprinted in Conjectures and Refutations. He was asked to give a talk about the nature of philosophy. And when he started, and he's talking in this article, he says, well, he doesn't really want to answer a question like that. He thinks it's rather fruitless to discuss what philosophy is or what is mathematics. Just get on with it, he says. He says, it's all about problems, and we want to solve problems. Problems that arise from outside philosophy. And it's that that keeps philosophy alive and vibrant. And one of the things that I've learned from studying philosophers like Karl Popper, who has been a big influence on me, is that I learned to distinguish abstractions from reality. And I think this is something that you get when you read the great philosophers, and the modern philosophers who probably will become great in the future, and that what is the difference between abstraction and reality? Now, with abstractions, I mean, I'm thinking of things like numbers as a particularly good example. Abstractions are things that we know all about. We've got complete access to abstractions. We invent them. We can study them. We can talk about them. We know everything there is to know about an abstraction. But when it comes to the world, we don't have direct access to the world. But one of the things we do in all the sciences, in my view, this is my view of how science works, and also I think how other areas of intellectual activity work, is that you have a sort of primary hypothesis whereby you say that a particular portion of reality is an instantiation of one of these abstract entities. And this I find to be a very powerful idea, and something which I see discussed a lot in the philosophical literature. Now that's quite an abstract remark, and I thought I would make one other example which was much more concrete and much more modern. Now, I spent most of my career working in the oil industry, and I took early retirement a couple of years ago, and to make amends for my bad ways in the past, I turned to looking at the problems of climate scientists, and I've been working as a mathematician with climate scientists here in the university as a research fellow. And I've been going to a lot of climate, this is global warming, climate change meetings, particularly in what's called the James Martin School, which I just put an advert in. A lot of their meetings are actually open to the public. You have to register on the website. But a lot of very interesting meetings where professional philosophers, amongst others, talk. And when the philosophers talk, they're usually talking about the ethics associated with climate change. And the classic problem there, deep, important problem, very impressive, is how much do we owe future generations? Why should we care about people who haven't even been born yet, who won't be born for another 50 years? They can look after themselves. So most of the debate is on that. But my interest as a scientist has been more in the philosophy of the science rather than in its application. And I just thought I'd say a few words before I sit down and allow the today's speakers, is that in terms of philosophy, what is the point? There's this philosopher called Arthur Peterson, who's a Dutch philosopher and climate scientist. He works for a Dutch environmental organisation. And there's this very easily accessible paper, Philosophy of Climate Change, that was published in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. Just like Popper says, the best philosophical things often come outside of direct philosophy. But he's also published a book called Simulating Nature, which is actually an extended version of his doctoral thesis. And in this, he discusses the philosophical problems to do with climate. Now, if nothing is, if anything is to show that philosophy has a point, I think it's these practical discussions about the conceptual problems to do with climate change that demonstrate one of its values. So that will be my little contribution to the debate. So I think we should now start the proceedings. So the first speaker is Bob Stone, who is going to give us a talk on Socrates the Activist. There was a handout, which I think probably everybody's got. Bob, if you want to come up and some of you probably know that there are some little biographies of the people giving the talks about their basic philosophical qualifications. And the thing I was impressed by, all four speakers are very, very professional in their background. So Bob, take it away.